The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Cellaring wine and seeing for yourself how its flavours evolve is one of the most exciting aspects of wine appreciation. But it can be intimidating, and there's some fundamentals you need to know to ensure you get the best results. In this episode of the show, St. Hugo chief winemaker Peter Munro gives you some of these pointers, like how to choose age-worthy wines, store them correctly, and identify drinking windows for optimal consumption. With more than 20 years of winemaking experience, Peter's career has spanned some of the world's most prominent wine regions. Coonawarra and the Barossa, obviously, but also Tasmania, Hawke's Bay in NZ, and the Napa Valley in California. St. Hugo Cabernet is a mainstay of many Australian cellars, a long-standing fixture in the Langton's classification of Australian fine wine. It is built to age for a minimum of 10 to 15 years, and the better vintages will last considerably longer. And now, perfectly timed for Christmas gifting and festivities, you can get your hands on some of the most outstanding back vintages of St. Hugo Cabernet, which have been hand-selected after rigorous tasting and review by Peter. Find out how at the end of this interview, in this special episode of the Drinks Adventures podcast, produced with the support of St. Hugo. Well, Peter Munro, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
It's a pleasure.
Maybe just to kick off with, give us a bit of an overview of what you think are the best grape varieties for cellaring.
I think all grape varieties will age in cellar, but what you're really looking for in a wine that will age gracefully, I suppose, is fruit intensity supported by tannin structure. And the two varieties I think that probably best sum that up are Cabernet and Shiraz, but especially Cabernet. The tannin structure you get out of Cabernet is quite linear, and it really does lead in itself to a nice skeleton to build fruit around. And over time, that tannin skeleton just mellows slowly over time and sort of becomes more seamless with the fruit. So if I was going to pick one variety, I'd say it was Cabernet.
Shiraz still does pretty well though, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And definitely, Shiraz has this lovely plumpness of fruit in the middle. And so often people will enjoy their Shiraz earlier than Cabernet. And I know I would. I would generally drink Shiraz a bit earlier than Cabernet because it's got this yummy plumpness of fruit in the middle that is a little bit more attractive in its youth. Whereas Cabernet, I think, really comes into its own when you give it some time in the cellar.
What about like the treatment of the grapes in the winery? Are there things that you do that play a role in how well something will cellar?
Yeah, definitely. I think with the way I approach winemaking, and especially red winemaking for wines to age, is to build a balanced wine, because you could extract, really work a ferment and extract a whole heap of tannin out of a parcel. And you might have this tannin structure that you think is going to age really well, but if you've got no fruit or the fruit isn't in balance with the tannin, it won't age that gracefully because you don't have the freshness of the fruit to go with the tannin. So what is really important is how you balance that tannin extraction out in the ferment with the quality of the fruit. And that's why we taste the ferments every day and make decisions about how softly or how more extractively we're pulling out the tannins from the skins.
Has that approach evolved, like the sort of what you would consider to be a balanced wine now versus what perhaps your predecessors might have considered to be balanced? Has that approach changed over time?
I think every winemaker brings their own personality to making wine, and I think that's a great thing. With a brand like St. Hugo, you've got a history and a style that you need to honour and respect. I think that's really important, but you'd be kidding yourself if you didn't say that each winemaker has a little bit of a bent and their personality goes into how they make the wine, yeah.
And what about vintage conditions? You know, what sort of impact is that going to have on the age-worthiness of a wine?
A lot, really. It's the great thing about winemaking is that you have to adapt to what comes up every year, and every year is different, as we know, and some years are better than others. So you can't make wine the same way every year and expect the same result. You have to adapt when you pick the fruit, how much you extract out of the grapes during the fermentation process, to the quality of the fruit, and the quality of the fruit is affected by the vintage. So the years where all those are in balance, you've got great fruit intensity, but you can extract out that tannin nicely, are the ones that will age the best, and the ones where maybe the fruit intensity wasn't as good are probably the ones that won't age quite as well. But that's the beauty of wine. I mean, it's not the same every year. And I think from a winemaking perspective, that's the challenge and the interest, because you go into every vintage trying to get the best out of that vintage.
And from a consumer's point of view, it's sort of about understanding which vintages are going to be best suited to leaving in the cellar for a bit longer, and which might be better to, you know, for enjoying sooner. And perhaps sometimes you'll be drinking some of the, you know, older vintages sooner than the younger ones. It just depends.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think I was just talking about this earlier today, is that we've just released some of the back vintages into some of our stores, and you've got the 07 and the 08, which are both now getting to that point where they're really nice drinking. But the 07's in its drinking window. It's a bit of a more lightly framed wine, whereas the 08 is a pretty structural and a more robust style of St Hugo wine. And that's one that I would quite happily put back into the cellar and come back to in 5 years' time. But the more elegant 07 is the one that I prefer to be drinking right now.
We've talked about Cabernet and Shiraz, which are obviously going to be the varieties that are people, you know, going to be most likely to have a look at putting away. But obviously Grenache is having a bit of a moment these days. How does that compare for, you know, cellar worthiness?
It will cellar nicely, and probably more in the medium to mid-term. But it also comes back to how you make it. One of the things we've done really well in the Australian industry recently with Grenache is made these really yummy, plush wines with really fine tannins that are very approachable and sort of Moorish in their youth. So I think most people are drinking these wines as younger wines and enjoying them, and that's not a bad thing. But it's not to say that they won't age over that sort of 5 to 10 year period. And there's Grenache from Australia and from around the world that will age a lot longer. The St Hugo GSM, which is mainly Grenache, usually about the 70%, like the 2014 is drinking beautifully at the moment, so at that nice seven years of age.
Now, St Hugo also has a Cabernet Shiraz in the range. Does working with those two varieties together, you know, give you some extra tools to work with in order to build a wine that's really fit for the cellar?
Absolutely, and there's a reason why the great Australian reds from the 50s and 60s were Cabernet Shiraz or Shiraz Cabernet, because they go so well together. And I think we should be, as an industry, really proud of that blend, because, as I was saying at the start, this plushness of Shiraz really fills out the mid-palate, and the structure of the Cabernet pulls all that plus Shiraz in a bit, so you get a really balanced wine. It's a fun blend to put together, because I always want to end a blending session seeing a really balanced wine, and Shiraz and Cabernet lend themselves to doing that really well. So, it's probably a bit of a wine in the St Hugo portfolio that goes under the radar, but they age really, really well. And vintage to vintage, you've got two regions as well. We've got Coonawarra and Barossa, and you can balance out. If one region's had a slightly better year than the other, we can sort of have a bit more from that region and a bit less from the other. So it gives it just a little bit more flexibility.
Fantastic. Now we're moving on to a controversial topic here, which is what's the best bottle closure for ageing? That's going to depend on who you talk to, isn't it?
It will. I firmly sit in the screw cap side of the argument. I've been fortunate enough over many, many years to taste a lot of trials, done cork versus screw cap, now wines that are pushing 30 plus years of age. And the freshness while still aging, you get out of screw cap, I think is a better representation of what the winemaker was envisaging when they put the blend together. The variation you get with cork is sometimes very frustrating. Wines still age in screw cap, and there's enough oxygen in the wine for that to happen over a long period of time. But I do think you get a fresher, more balanced aging under screw cap. But there will be people who will disagree with me.
Now, what about if you're coming to, you know, you decide that you want to have a go at holding on to some bottles at home, what are the key considerations in terms of the sort of environment that you should be looking to create, and what are some of the cellaring options that you have?
Yeah, it's obviously going to depend on how much time and how much space and how much money you've got. But, wine fridges are great because they keep a constant temperature, and that's what I would generally say. If you've just got a cupboard or something in your home, or you don't have that much space, somewhere where the temperature is consistent is what you want. You don't want the fluctuation. So even if it's a little bit warmer than ideal, and ideal is normally around that 15, 16 degrees, but even if it's a bit warmer than that, but it's consistent at that temperature, that's a better place to store your wine than having something go from 10 to 25 to 10 to 25. That fluctuation is probably not what you want to store your wines in.
Is there anything else you can do to sort of try and moderate those temperature fluctuations? I've heard people talk about if you stack your boxes all closely together, then having that mass of bottles together will kind of slow that process down a bit.
Yeah, it will, and it just a bigger mass to absorb that temperature. And if those temperature fluctuations are sort of happening over the day, you probably will get a much more consistent temperature. But if you've got a cupboard that goes through summer and winter, it might not make as much a difference in that situation.
And ultimately, that's going to impact on the drinking window, that winemakers will tend to put down what you think a drinking window is, but then that's when cellaring conditions kind of come into play, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When winemakers, and when we say, like, we really look at St Hugo as wines that will, drink beautifully from 10 to 20 years, but that depends a lot on the cellaring conditions. So we're sort of thinking about this in a fairly ideal situation. So those fluctuations and higher temperatures will probably accelerate that ageing slightly.
It's also, in terms of when a wine is ready or when a consumer is going to enjoy it, that does very much come down to personal taste as well, doesn't it? Like, you really need to have the experience of trying some older wines in order to know when you prefer drinking your wines. And some people might not like to drink older wines, and that's okay too.
Absolutely. I mean, like everything with wine, it's all your personal preference. It's a drink that you should enjoy, and you should enjoy it when you like it. But one of the things I think we need to do is educate about the joys of drinking older wines, because I think some people don't necessarily know that they like or dislike older wines because they just haven't had the experience to be able to have that, have those wines to try. But yeah, absolutely. I know some, for example, I generally prefer to drink my Shiraz a little bit earlier and a little bit fresher, but I like to drink Cabernet with a bit of age on it because those flavours for me are more appealing and more interesting. And I think the tannins with Cabernet really come together. Whereas young Cabernet can be, it can be a little bit more aggressive, and that's why that bit of time helps. But that's my personal preference, and I've got some very knowledgeable wine friends who like drinking, especially their Shiraz, really quite young, because that's their personal preference.
What difference does it make what size the bottle is for aging?
It actually makes a big difference. A 750ml bottle versus say a 1.5 or a 3 litre bottle stored the same way, the bigger bottles will age slower. And we actually looked at this last year with our museum at the winery, where we've got quite a lot of, especially magnums, 1.5 litres, and we looked at them comparatively to the 750 mils, and the magnums were, to a bottle, brighter, fresher, looking in better condition. So if it is something you've got where you've got the ability to age stuff in a good environment and you like drinking older wines, I think magnums really are worth investing in.
When should people decant wines that they've pulled out of the cellar?
It's not an exact science. The younger the wine is a good idea to decant the wine. Even if you're drinking some fairly young wines, I always find decanting those lifts the fruit and just opens them up. If you're talking about, let's say, like a St. Hugo Cabernet that's 10 to 15 years, I think a decant would really help that, and you'll see more bright, fresh fruit come out of the wine, and it will last in the decanter for quite a while. Where it gets a bit tricky is when you get really quite old wines that, you know, it will depend on the wine, obviously, but let's say 20, 25-year-old wines, or, you know, a 50-year-old wine that you've found somewhere, they don't handle oxygen that well. And quite often, if you pour a great wine but a very, very old wine into a glass, it might not last that long. And so if you decant it and you splash a lot around a lot in a decanter, it might lose some of its freshness. So
that's essentially because it's been exposed to so much more oxygen over a long period of time that you don't really need to, you know, to sort of hit it with more oxygen when you open it.
Yeah, and also over that period of time, all the tannins have fallen out of that wine, so, and they sort of protect against the oxygen. So once all those tannins and colour have fallen out of the wine over many, many years in the bottle, there's not much left in the wine to protect it from that additional oxygen you're just imparting to it. So as a rough thing, over 25 years, I would be a little bit cautious about how much you decanted it, or if you've only got two of you, I would definitely probably not, because you're going to have that bottle open for a while. If you've got 8 people, 10 people, and you're all going to drink that glass straight away, just take into mind that some of those wines have a lifespan once you open them.
I suppose the other reason for decanting is, as you mentioned, when all those tannins have fallen out, you're probably going to have some sediment there that you want to try and separate out too, which a decanter can help with that, can't it?
Yeah, it definitely can, and it helps when you've got 10 people and the last person doesn't get all the dregs in their glass and very upset.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. It's separating all the solids that have fallen out over that period of time.
What back vintage wines do you currently have in the cellar at St. Hugo that people that are available for purchase?
Yeah, so we've just started a program in with retailers to pull out things that we've kept for usually that, you know, 12 to 10 year range. So at selected stores you can find the 07, the 08, the 09, and I think now the 10 Coonawarra Cabernet, plus the 2009 Shiraz available. So it's nice to be able to show these wines how we as a winemaking group envisage them when we put them together, because they are made to age, and especially the Cabernet, I think, really starts to shine once it's had 10 years in bottle. So it's good to be able to have those wines out there so people can see them. Because we keep a museum of all the wines that we have ever made and go through those once a year just to check how they're all progressing. And it's nice that other people who don't have the ability to have a great cellar or have the space to do it can go out there and know that these wines have actually been cellared well at the winery, and we've just released them when they're ready to drink.
And how do you choose those vintages?
Where they're getting into their nice drinking window, and I'd say they're probably at the beginning of their nice drinking window, so they will actually still continue to age nicely if you want to put them away for 5 or 6 years. But it's also great to be able to go to a bottle shop and go, I'm going to buy this tonight and drink it tonight and know that it's ready to be drunk. From the retailer's perspective, they really love it because we've essentially done all the hard work for them and giving them wines that they can tell a story to their consumers. And it opens up a breadth of wine knowledge and wine experience that a lot of consumers haven't had, because they haven't had the ability to sell these wines, or they haven't had the self-control to not drink the wines that they've bought.
I think we're all guilty of that sometimes.
Yeah, so a lot of consumers don't get the chance because they don't have the, you know, the ability to age wines, but they're also not that aware of what, you know, the joys of drinking an older wine are. And so I think we've got a bit of an education as an industry to expose people to these joys as well, because this is what we're trying to do with St. Hugo and make wines that do, I think, drink better as older wines.
When you go back through the museum or the library stock, are there any particular old vintages that just blow your mind with how well they're standing up?
So St Hugo Cabernet started in 1980, and the 1980s a bit past it, but the 85, what is now 36 years old, looks really, really good. And one of the standouts is the 1990, which is now at 31 years old, looks absolutely beautiful.
Now tell me about your personal cellar. Have you cellared wine much yourself?
Yeah, I'm one of these people that don't have the self-control to I have a little cellar. I've probably never had a great place to store them, so I don't have a massive cellar, but I do have a few cases of older wines that come out at different occasions.
And what are some of the oldest bottles that you've got?
Well, I've got one of the things I am proud about is I've got some wines from my first vintage. I worked in the wine industry that I worked at Wynns, you know, long, long, long time ago. So I bought some wines when I was the cellar hand there. I've still got a couple of those bottles, which I think shows enormous self-control. And I do have a bottle that I'm saving for a birthday coming up of a 58 Leo Buren Clare Red that I'm looking forward to.
Now, you just told me before we started recording that 2021 is the vintage that people should be looking out for in the future.
Yeah, it's early days. I mean, we're talking a couple of months after we finished pressing off the last reds out of Coonawarra. But the Barossa and Coonawarra, where St Hugo's sourcing all its grapes from, it has been a very, very promising vintage, both for whites and reds, which is unusual as well. But the Shiraz out of the Barossa is at this very early stage, one of the best vintages I've ever seen. And Coonawarra Cabernet is, again, showing real intense fruit characters. As I said, just been pressed off only a couple of months ago, and we're still in the process of getting some of these wines into oak now. But at this early stage, it's very pleasing to go through that whole lot of hard work and know that there's some great wines in the cellar that will come out in, you know, 3 to 4 years' time.
I know it's early days yet, but in terms of your gut feel of where things are at the moment, put that in a context of the last 10 or 20 years, where you think it might sit. Looking back, I suppose 2012, you know, is a vintage where everyone was really huge on it in South Australia. Where would it sit next to that? And, I mean, I've heard great things about 2018 as well in the Barossa recently, so...
Yeah. I suppose the vintages from the Barossa that come to mind out of the last decade for me are 10, 12 and 18. I would have it probably better than 12 and somewhere in that 10 quality. So it's very, very good. And Coonawarra, yeah, similar type comments. It's got the real potential to be one of the vintages that people should look out for.
Cool. Well, Peter, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Currently available in St Hugo's Fine and Rare collection are St Hugo Cabernet 1998, 2004, 2007, 2010 and 2012. There's also some Magnums, Double Magnums and 6-litre Imperials available of some of these wines. You can purchase them direct from St Hugo's online cellar door at sthugo.com. The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at by James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.